Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for holding. Your lines have been placed on listen-only mode until the question-answer portion of today's conference. During the question-answer session, you can press star, then one on your touch-tone phone to ask any questions. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I'd like to turn our call over to our first speaker for today, Mr. Dan Jerome. Sir, you may proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Jerome. I'm National Press Officer for USDA Forest Service in Washington, D.C. My phone number after this call is over, our main press office number is 205-1134, and the main press number at Interior is 208-6416. Either number, you can obtain information afterwards or for follow-up. Today, with me this afternoon, is the Interior Deputy Assistant Secretary for Policy and Management, Nina Hatfield, and also Undersecretary for Natural Resources and Environment for the Department of Agriculture, Mark Ray. In addition, Tom Harbor, Director of Fire and Aviation Management for USDA Forest Service, is also here, and also Mr. Rob Collins, who's Fire Management Officer from the Bureau of Land Management here in Washington, also is with us. On that, I'll turn it over to Undersecretary Ray.
Thanks, Dan, and welcome to our colleagues from the Department of the Interior, and thanks for all of you joining us today telephonically. We're here today to announce some good news as we enter into the active part of our fire season. That good news is we've completed the safety reviews of one model of aircraft, the Lockheed P-2Vs, and will shortly, after one additional inspection, be returning 9 P-2Vs to our aviation fleet. Let me digress for a moment for those of you who haven't been following this story generally over the last year and give you some background leading up to today's announcement. In April of last year, the National Transportation Safety Board completed an investigation of three large air tanker crashes that occurred in the late 1990s, early parts of this decade, and made several recommendations necessary to assure their safe operation. After reviewing the National Transportation Safety Board, we grounded the large air tanker fleet last May and commenced, with the advice of the Federal Aviation Administration, the necessary safety reviews to assure ourselves that some or all of the large air tanker fleet could fly safely and effectively as part of the firefighting mission. When we made that decision last May to ground the large air tanker fleet, we immediately moved to restructure our aviation fleet to fill in for the missing large air tankers with a larger component of helicopters, helitankers, and fixed-wing single-engine air tankers, which are smaller in design and capacity than the large fixed-wing air tankers. We stated at that time that we were confident that our reconfigured fleet would achieve our firefighting needs for the 2004 firefighting season. In retrospect, our predictions were correct. In the primary use of our aviation assets for firefighting is to assist in fire suppression on initial attack. That is, to catch fires quickly while they're still small and extinguish them before they become big fires. Aviation assets are critical for this part of the firefighting mission, particularly where access to engines and to field crews is limited by terrain or topography. In 2003, with our entire larger tanker fleet intact, the combined federal agency services were successful in extinguishing 98.3% of all fires on initial attack. In 2004, with a reconfigured fleet that involved a smaller number of large fixed-wing air tankers, we succeeded in extinguishing 99.1% of all ignitions on initial attack. So our reconfigured fleet, while more expensive to operate, because helicopters are more expensive on an hourly basis to operate than fixed-wing air tankers, was successful in meeting our firefighting mission. The value of bringing those large air tankers back online, which we can assure are safe to fly, is that they offer us more flexibility in firefighting tactics, and they are cheaper on a per-hour basis to operate. As we commenced the review of the large air tanker fleet last May, we were able, within a month and a half time, to return one model to the fleet, the P3 Orion, which is also a Lockheed model. And we were able to return 8 P3 Orions into the fleet, which we used for firefighting purposes through most of the last fire season. The reason the P3 was able to be returned to the fleet quickly is that that particular aircraft model is still in active military use by the Navy, and therefore the information necessary to compute an operational service life for the P3 was readily available. What the Navy's data tell us is that you can safely fly a P3 for 18,000 flight hours, provided it's adequately maintained and serviced. After 18,000 flight hours, notwithstanding the quality of the maintained maintenance and servicing, you run the risk of an increased likelihood of catastrophic metal failure, and therefore after 18,000 hours it is substantially less safe and imprudent to fly a P3. All of the P3s in the fleet were substantially under 18,000 hours, therefore in early July of last year they were returned to the fleet. We subsequently learned, however, that it would become a much more difficult task to find the operational life limit for the remaining models in the existing air tanker fleet. That would be the P2Vs as well as DC-4s, 6s, and 7s. And the reason it was substantially more difficult is that none of those four models, are still in active military use, and there were no easily obtainable data to establish what an operational service life limit would be for any of those four models. Through subsequent research with the assistance of Lockheed Corporation and the FAA, we were able to find an avionics consultant, Avenger Air, who could provide the needed information based upon their long-standing experience with the P2P. Specifically, they had available to them data from tests that were made by Japan, which also flies a number of P2Vs, in the mid to late 1960s, which established an operational service life for the P2Vs. With all of that information together and additional analysis by Avenger Air, we were able to conclude that the operational life of a P2V is 15,000 hours. There are 9 P2Vs available to fly, all of which are substantially under 15,000 hours in flight time. What we're announcing today, at the conclusion of the research that we did along with Avenger Air in consultation with the Federal Aviation Administration, is that we will, after one series of inspections that Avenger Air felt necessary, be returning the P2Vs to the fleet. That will be over the next 3 or 4 weeks as each of the 9 aircraft involved is inspected, and we assure ourselves that the areas where Avenger Air suggested additional inspections should take place are in fact sound and the planes are therefore safe and ready to fly. As I said, that will occur over the next couple of weeks. The first inspections will be taking place this weekend, so the first of the aircraft will likely be returned to service early next week. As we return these P2Vs to service, we will then evaluate the reconfigured fleet and evaluate whether we can stand down some of the more expensive assets that we've already procured, or as the fire season develops, if it develops with more intensity than we expect, we'll retain those assets to retain a somewhat larger fleet than the one that we carried through the 2004 fire season. For those of you who want some locational specifics about where these P2Vs are located, they are flown by 2 contractors. One is Neptune Aviation, that's headquartered in Missoula, Montana. They are the owners of 7 of the P2Vs, The other is Minden Aircraft in Minden, Nevada, which owns two of the P-2Bs. The companies were notified this morning and are eager to start the inspection process to return to service. I think that summarizes what we have to announce today, except to say that the analysis of the DC-4s, 6s, and 7s continues to progress. We're finding even greater challenges in securing the information necessary to calculate an operational service life for those aircraft, and we don't expect that we will likely have that completed in time for this fire season. That's not a certainty, but at this point it's becoming increasingly more likely. We are confident, nonetheless, that with the heavier component of helicopters and single-engine tankers, as well as now an additional 9 heavy tankers, that we will achieve the same level of success that we have the last couple of fire seasons. On our respective websites, at 2 o'clock is a press release that describes this announcement and also provides a brief summary of the configuration of our fleet today as we enter the most active part of the fire season. With that, I'll turn it over to Nina Hatfield from the Department of the Interior for her thoughts, and then we'll take your questions.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Well, we at Interior certainly are glad to join in with this announcement because we recognize that the air tankers are an important component of the pool of resources that our fire suppression program has in dealing with fire. And we recognize that restoring these aircraft to our fleet will certainly give us greater flexibility as we provide aviation support to wildland firefighting. And like Mark, we are confident that these air tankers and our other air support will enable us to maintain the efficiency that we've seen in stopping fires on initial attack. So with that, I think we can go to questions.
Okay, Kevin, this is Dan Drone. Let's take our first question.
Thank you. Again, at this time, if you would like to ask any questions, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. One moment, please, for the first question. And our first question comes from Dan Berman. Your line is open.
Hi. I know some of the issues regarding the reconfigured tanker fleet had to do with cost last year. Is there any idea of how much the fleet will cost to operate this year and if there's going to be a savings compared to last year?
The question is whether we have any idea. I'm going to repeat your question, Dan, because you're coming through on a fairly weak connection. The question is whether we have any idea of what level of savings we might enjoy this year as we bring these new air tankers back online. And I don't think we do at this point, in large part because the overall cost will be a function of what the fire season is like. So comparing one year to another is probably not a valid comparison. We did do a comparison of last year's season, just looking at the flight hours that we racked up and trying to do an evaluation of those flight hours that might have been attributed to large fixed-wing air tankers versus helicopters had we had more tankers available. And our guess is that the reconfigured fleet probably cost us net about $40 million more than we otherwise would have spent. And we'll try to do the same comparison this year, but it's a comparison that's better made within a year, looking at the hours flown by tankers versus helicopters, than it is a comparison from year to year.
Okay, next question.
Our next question from Robert Struckman. Please announce your company's name.
The Missoulian. In Missoula, Montana? Can I go ahead?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Okay. I'm wondering, there has been some talk about a settlement over the cancellations last year. I know Neptune, some people at Neptune mentioned that to me. Where are you in terms of a settlement in those regards? You know, settling, they're basically Neptune saying they had a contract, it was canceled, they want some compensation. for the contract. Is there a settlement?
The settlement discussions are ongoing. They are entitled to some compensation. I don't think anybody disputes that.
Right.
The discussions that are ongoing involve what the right level of that compensation is. The fact that we're going to return them to the fleet this year, with the assumptions that I indicated, will have a bearing on those discussions, since
right.
We'll be paying them, and they won't be seeking compensation for lost revenues this year.
And our next question comes from Claire Vitucci. Please announce your company name.
Press Enterprise, Riverside, California.
Thank you. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, I actually have two quick questions. So the total number of planes, then, that would take it up to 19, am I correct? And then I'm kind of unclear, the DC-4, DC-6, and DC-7, are those going to fly this season or no?
Taking your second question first, based on the difficulty that we're having acquiring the data and doing the analysis necessary to derive an operational service life for the DCs 4, 6s, and 7s, we're not optimistic that we'll have them in the air this year. Going to your first question, then, we have 7 P3s that are now contracted, up to 9 P2Vs that will be contracted for a total of 16. We are flying 1 DC-7 on restricted use with monitoring equipment to help develop the data, to rather help acquire the data that we need to do the calculation. That brings us to 17. And then we have access to 8 military C-130 aircraft, which are outfitted with modular airborne firefighting systems, which we've used in past years. So that brings us to 25 total, which is not that much less than the fleet in 2003, where we were using about 33 aircraft total.
Thank you.
Hey, go ahead with the next question.
Next question from Heidi Mile. Please announce your company name.
I'm from KECI-TV in Missoula, Montana. I just want to ask about the importance of having some air tankers available here in Montana.
It will be important when we're in the height of Montana's fire season. The air tankers, as is the case with most of our aviation assets, are national assets. That is to say, they are used nationally. They move from region to region as the intensity of the fire season moves from region to region. Again, for those of you who haven't followed this story in any detail, the way a typical fire season evolves is that it starts in the early spring in the southeastern United States. We had a relatively benign early season in the southeast. Then it moves to the southwestern states. So far, we've had a relatively benign season in the southwest, although the weather predictions for this weekend give us some concern. And then it moves north through the Rockies until we get into Montana, Idaho, eastern Washington, eastern Oregon, towards the end of the summer, and then it finishes up in the early fall in Southern California. So that's kind of the general pattern of the fire season. Our aviation assets will move with that pattern. The air tankers that are stationed, that are owned by the company that's headquartered in Missoula, will be used to fight fires in Montana, but they'll also be used to fight fires in other parts of the country as well. Again, one of the benefits that the large fixed-wing tankers give us in terms of flexibility is that we can move them faster over longer distances than we generally can helicopters, which means we can purchase less of those to the same effect than we can with helicopters because we have to deploy helicopters differently.
Okay, let's go to the next question, please.
Next question from Steve Timko. Please announce your company name.
Steve Timko with the Reno Gazette-Journal. You said that overall attacks increased somewhat success in putting out fires. Have you identified specific fires that could have been put out if you had the air tanker fleet more readily available last year?
No, none of our large incident analysis to date of the 2004 fire season has indicated any fire where the lack of aviation assets were causal in our lack of success on initial attack. More commonly, the issue involved weather patterns, if the ignition occurred during a high wind period, or a situation where a dry lightning event caused multiple ignitions, and our assets, both aviation and ground assets, were not able to get to them all and extinguish them on initial attack. You'll hear differently, I'm quite certain, because every fire has an audience, and in many cases people will play a game associated with woulda, coulda, shoulda, but our analysis so far does not indicate any of our large fire incidents became large fires as a result of a lack of aviation support.
Okay, let's go to the next question, please.
Next question from Ted Robbins of National Public Radio. Your line is open.
Hi, I just have a more or less a point of clarification. If I heard you right, you said that you were doing one series of inspections, hopefully over the next week, but you said possibly 3 or 4 weeks, before allowing the P-2Vs back up into the air, but you're announcing today that they're going to fly. So,
the inspections are areas of particular concern about the prospects for catastrophic metal fatigue. And that now that we've done the analysis and know where to look, that inquiry, that inspection, that look, if you will be part of our normal inspection process. But we have not previously looked at these aircraft in these places in this way, lacking the information that we have now procured. So that's the sort of the routine inspection that has to occur before each of the planes goes up.
But how can you announce that they're going to fly?
That as we look, we'll find some evidence of cracking, and if so, then a part will have to be replaced. But that alone shouldn't ground the aircraft. It should just mean that it'll take a little bit longer for it to get up in the air, because we'll have to replace a part that we now know to look for, because that's the likely place where catastrophic metal fatigue would occur of any place in the aircraft. In some places, you have to remove pieces to look at things that are underneath the surface, and that's what will be done. Is that clear?
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, next question, thanks.
Just as a reminder, if you would like to ask any questions, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. Next question from Tamara Keith. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm from KPCC. I have a couple of questions. One, do you feel like this is enough heavy air tankers? And two, does this resolve sort of the long-term question of the health of the air tanker fleet?
The answer to question one is we have an adequate aviation fleet to do the work we need to do to continue to suppress 99% of the fires that are ignited. If we had a few more of the large air tankers, we'd decommission or stand down some of the more expensive assets. So that's why we're continuing to do the analysis on the DC-4s, 5s, and 7s. Answer to question, so it's a question of cost effectiveness and getting the best result for the taxpayer as well as for the homeowner that may be affected by a wildfire someplace in the United States this season. Answer to the second question is that this generation of tankers is not at it's the end of its life, but it's getting there, and we are looking at alternatives for modernizing the fleet and for bringing in the next generation of aircraft. That's something that we, our colleagues at the Department of the Interior, and the state's firefighting agencies are all looking at right now. It's not something that has to happen immediately, but it's something that needs to happen in the next couple of years as these aircraft begin to approach more closely the 15,000-hour limit for the P-2Vs and the 18,000-hour limit for the P-3s.
So when you talk about this generation, you are referring both to the P-3 and the P-2V?
I'm referring more to the P-2Vs because there is a finite number of P-2Vs still out there with a low number of hours on them. The P-3s are a little bit different situation because the Navy is still using P-3s on active duty. Therefore, Lockheed was manufacturing them a lot longer than they were manufacturing P-2Vs. Therefore, as the Navy now moves to its next generation sub-Hunter, which will be a modified Boeing 737, and they begin to decommission P-3s, they're going to decommission a lot of P-3s with relatively few hours on them. Those P-3s may in fact be part of the next generation because they'll come available for non-military use, that is for surplus, with maybe only a couple thousand or even less hours on them. And so they may be part of the next generation of aircraft. But in addition to that, there are, by our last estimate, 16 separate aviation firms that are experimenting with new aircraft or modifications of existing aircraft for firefighting purposes that are trying to go through the steps necessary to get them into operation for firefighting purposes. There are several steps involved. The first and probably threshold is that they have to be certified by the FAA that they're generally safe to fly. Then they have to be certified by the Air Tanker Board, an interagency group, to show us that they can actually perform for firefighting purposes. So that is to say, they can drop retardant or water in the way and in the place that they say they can drop them, in the way that we need them to drop them. And then lastly, they'll have to be certified for us by safety purposes to make sure they're not just safe to fly generally, but if they are reconfigured for the firefighting mission, that they're safe to fly in that mission as well. So far, none of these new models has achieved all three of those certifications. Some are at the 2 out of 3 stage of development, but we think probably a couple of them will be certified and are promising, and we're not ruling out. In fact, we're encouraging companies that are working on that to continue on. We've told them that if they can provide us with a new aircraft, particularly a purpose-specific aircraft for firefighting purposes, at a cost that's competitive, that we'll be happy to add them to our fleet. And that'll be the rest of the next generation.
Okay, thank you. Next question.
Our next question comes from Michael Milstein. Your line is open. Please announce your company name.
Hi, Michael Milstein from the Oregonian. We're likely to have a situation again this year where the state, at least the state of Oregon, is going to be contracting and hiring some of the planes that you deemed unsafe or that you're not sure are safe for firefighting purposes. Last year there was some issue over whether federal agencies were comfortable with those planes working on federal incidents. What's the position on that this year?
Well, first, let me offer a clarification. It was the NTSB who deemed them unsafe. Our job is to respond to the NTSB's recommendations to try to assure that they can be flown safely. And yes, there was a point of departure between one or a few states last year about their willingness to contract with aircraft that neither they nor we, nor for my knowledge anybody else, could certify be flown safely. That will be less of a problem this year because some of the states have been able to acquire aircraft like the CL-215s and CL-415s. That have already the required safety specifications. It may continue to be a problem in other areas. What we've said is that the states are free to fly them on state-managed fires as long as we're not bearing the responsibility in a federally controlled fire for putting an aircraft that we can't be sure can be safely flown in the air.
Okay. Although we do take into account that we might need those resources if there's an immediate threat to life or property. So there, we look at it holistically there in terms of what we can certify versus what might be needed in an emergency for life or property.
Right, as opposed to the routine operation of the aircraft
right.
In a normal mission environment.
But the policy is essentially the same as we had last year.
All right. Next question.
Next question from Mary Jo Pitzel. Your line is open.
Yes, this is Mary Jo Pitzel with the Arizona Republic. Currently, there's two T2Vs flying. Does today's announcement add 9 to that for a total of 11, or does the 9 include the 2?
No, the 9 is included with those two.
Okay.
The two that are flying with instrumentation to acquire the data, much of which was the data we used in arriving at the conclusion about how we could fly the remainder safely. They were also flying with restrictions. We would not allow them to fly over the wildland-urban interface, where there was a higher likelihood that if they did fail, they would crash into a populated area. Now, once we complete this final inspection previously described, we'll take those restrictions off of these two and then subsequently bring the others into service as well.
And then one follow-up question. Will these remain based then in Missoula and Minden, or do they get moved around as the fire season moves around?
They move around as the fire season moves around.
Do you anticipate any being staged in the very near future in the Southwest, and if so, where?
I'd say since your fire season is just getting underway,
That's
a pretty good likelihood.
Any idea where they might be staged?
Not at this point. It would be one of the existing air tanker bases that we maintain in Albuquerque and New Mexico. We have one base in Albuquerque, one in Phoenix,
one in Prescott.
I think those are the three. Do we have a Silver City base, too? Or is that for smaller aircraft?
No, we operate out of Albuquerque, Williams Gateway, and Prescott, but the seats, the smaller aircraft, operate at a variety of venues, and then the helicopters can go anywhere.
Right. As you might guess, you need a longer landing strip for a large tanker than you do for a single-engine fixed-wing tanker, and obviously you need a larger landing area for fixed-wing aircraft than you do helicopters. So as far as the large fixed-wing tankers are concerned, they'll fly out of Williams, Prescott, or Albuquerque.
Okay, next question.
Again, if you would like to ask any questions, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. Next question from Robin Struckman of the Missoulian. Your line is open.
Hi. How long is this contract? Like, how many years?
These contracts are negotiated each year,
okay,
and they are varying lengths and two different times, because the air fleet is of different sizes during different parts of the fire season. And I'm glad you asked that question, because it allows me to amplify on something that's important. Because people often compare what they had fighting fires in their vicinity in October versus what they see there in March, and there's no reason they should be the same. Because we add equipment as the fire season gets more intense and demobilize equipment as it begins to fade. We don't keep the same number of planes in operation all year, because there's no need to, given the way the fire season moves around during the course of the year. Also, we have some planes that we contract for exclusive use. That is, we hold the exclusive use to them while they're under contract and they're not doing anything else. We have other assets that we sign contracts, other planes that we sign contracts for call when needed. In those instances, they can be doing other work for other purposes, but because we have a call when needed contract, if we call them, they're contractually obliged to come immediately when we need them. As you might guess, we pay a higher per hourly rate for call when needed contracts than we do exclusive use contracts, and one of the arts and sciences of managing our aviation fleet is to figure out the right balance between the two kinds of contracts so that we're getting the best return for the dollar invested.
Okay, moderator, any other questions?
At this time, I am showing no further questions, sir.
Okay, if there are no further questions, I'll turn it back to our Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Interior and the Undersecretary for any closing comments.
Well, just that, again, we are pleased that these assets are going to be a part of our total resources to fight fire in the coming season, and believe that it will help us in terms of our flexibility about how that each fire is managed on the ground. And so that's the important part in terms of helping keep our firefighters safe and do our job in the most efficient way we can.
I just close by saying firefighting, particularly aerial firefighting, is an inherently high-risk business. The people who do it perform an important public service. Our job is to minimize that risk and to make it as safe as possible, knowing that it's an inherently risky business. So what we've done through the year now, nearly a year's worth of analysis, is assure ourselves to the extent that we can that these aircraft are safe to fly, meeting the NTSB recommendations, and we welcome these two contractors and these aircraft back to the fleet and back to the fight.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. You have our numbers for follow-up questions, and the news releases should be posted on both the Department of Agriculture and Department of Interior websites. Thanks again. Talk to you all soon.